Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
Welcome to a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini, alongside Travis Anderson. And Travis, the college basketball season is officially over, 78 days away from the NBA draft.
I think everything we expected last night played out in that game with Villanova just running over top of Michigan in that game. I think that's how we both seen it playing out. That's how it played out.
I think most actually saw it playing out like that. Outside of Dante DiVincenzo going off, breaking an NCAA record for most points scored by a bench player, 31 points he had in that game, I expected Michigan to have no answer for the offensive onslaught I expected from Villanova. They started off a little sloppy. Michigan had their moments early on, but in the second half, it was Jay Wright's squad all the way through and through.
Yeah, Michigan offensively, they're not an offensive juggernaut. They're kind of a grind out. They are a team that's going to score anywhere from 50 to 70 points, and that's what they did last night. They were in that range. So Villanova's guard play once again was key, and Villanova overwhelmed Michigan, and Michigan again digs themselves a hole this time they couldn't recover from.
You know how many offensive rebounds Michigan had last night?
I'm going to say zero.
Six.
Eh, not enough.
Not enough. Not enough at all. Not against a team like Villanova that can score the basketball. I mean, you got to make sure you take care of every opportunity. Six offensive rebounds in this game. Mo Wagner for Michigan was 6 of 11. 1 of 4 from deep, had 16 points, 7 boards. I was talking yesterday how many players I thought would get drafted. Maybe three after watching last night. I don't know, the stock changes after the national championship. To me, Brunson was the only guy that was a slam dunk. I'm going to say Wagner is a second-round pick. I'll go ahead and give him that. And just maybe Mikal Bridges gets selected as well. Bridges may actually be a first-round pick. So three in this game last night. I don't see any of them being lottery picks.
No, they're borderline, you know, end of round, first round, into the second round.
But that's what made last night entertaining.
Yeah, and that's why, two of three. And those players coming back, you know, you get that turnaround where Villanova keeps these players because they're not first-rounders if they come back. No. And that's what you build off of.
Here's the dominance, though, that you have to consider. Okay, in the Big East, Villanova goes 14-4, and they finish behind Xavier for the Big East Championship. Okay, in the tournament, they beat Radisson 87-61. They beat Alabama 81-58. They beat West Virginia, who I didn't know if they'd get past West Virginia. I thought whoever won that game would actually win that region, and I think a lot of people agreed with me on that. They beat West Virginia 90-78. They beat Texas Tech 71-59. They beat KU 95-79. I mean, they walloped Kansas. And then they beat Michigan 79-62. They did not have a single game end in single digits as far as the deficit goes or the win margin goes. They beat everyone by double digits.
Dominated throughout their matchups and went 6 for 6, like you said, won the national championship, and none of their games were close.
We'll talk more college basketball a little bit later on in the show. We're going to be joined by Greg Peterson, who's an excellent college basketball mind. I want to get his thoughts on last night's game and, of course, the entire NCAA tournament. Regardless of what happened last night, I believe 10, 15, 20 years from now, 2018 will be remembered for what UMBC accomplished.
Yep.
And Loyola of Chicago getting to the Final Four.
You're going to always remember that. Yep. And that's just something that from 20 years from now that we'll look back on and be like, oh, yeah, the 16 beat the 1.
And 11 got to the Final Four.
Yeah, and Loyola had a chance to play for the national championship if it wasn't for that second half meltdown.
Let's move away from college basketball. Again, we'll spend more time on that topic a little bit later on in the show. But boxing took a major blow today. I think the biggest money fight to be made, it's a rematch between Canelo Alvarez and Gennady Golovkin. Canelo had to withdraw from this bout, which was scheduled for May 5th, because he has to meet with the Nevada State Athletic Commission because of two doping violations. Now, we have talked about this briefly over the last couple of weeks. Canelo failed not one but two tests in February. He claims it was because of contaminated meat, which to me, it does shake out. I mean, again, I just for the life of me cannot believe that Canelo at this particular stage in his career, where he has passed drug test after drug test after drug test, would all of a sudden test positive for a banned substance.
Why?
To me, it doesn't make any sense. And then you start taking a look at the history of clenbuterol, which is found in contaminated meat in Mexico, and that's why Canelo decided to move his fight camp from Mexico to San Diego. Unfortunately, there's just not enough time. He's got to meet with the Nevada State Athletic Commission and the board on April 18th. The fight was scheduled for May 5th. That gives you 2 weeks to promote a fight. Not going to happen. This fight, at least for right now, it's called off, and it is a major blow for the sport of boxing because, again, money-wise, it is the biggest fight to be made.
Yeah, boxing needed it, and right now it hurts boxing because there's really no interest in boxing right now. This fight was going to be something to promote the sport. And without this fight, it's just kind of, now what? We don't have anything to look forward to.
Well, we have Anthony Joshua and Deontay Wilder.
But how many people know those names?
I'm going to say quite a few know Deontay Wilder. And the reason I say that is because it's been so long since we've had a heavyweight American champion. It's been ages. In fact, I think Asim Rockman was the last American heavyweight champion. Had to have either been Asim Rockman or Chris Bird. I mean, we don't have to go back. We have to go back quite a ways to find our last American heavyweight champion. Deontay Wilder is that guy. I think worldwide, a Wilder-Joshua fight in the UK will put up buku numbers. But for fights to be made here in the country, I know we're talking about two foreigners with Klovakin and Canelo. Now, that is the biggest fight in boxing.
Mm-hmm.
It is. Because it was also announced yesterday that Manny Pacquiao is going to be stepping back into the ring. He's going to go up against Lucas Matisse, which, by the way, Matisse will knock out Manny Pacquiao. I'm going to call it right now. At this stage in Pacquiao's career, he will not be able to hang for 12 rounds with a very hard hand, a very loose fighting guy like Lucas Matisse. He will win that fight by knockout. But nobody's talking about that because Pacquiao is a shell of his former self. And nobody will be surprised when Matisse defeats Pacquiao, because that's what's going to happen in that fight. This was the fight for boxing. Canelo was supposed to be the man to carry the torch once Mayweather called it quits. This stains the sport.
Yeah, it
the
does.
Pound for pound number one fighter, if I had to pick right now, it's between Terrence Crawford. I know you're not a huge boxing guy. You like it, but I know you're not a huge boxing guy. Do you know who Terrence Crawford is?
I know a little about him, not a lot.
A little bit, not a lot, right? He's probably number one or number two in my pound-for-pound rankings just off of the top of my head. Pound-for-pound rankings are mythical, by the way. There's no, it's arbitrary. So to me, it would either be him or Canelo. Okay, and so I throw out Canelo. You know all about Canelo, but guess what? This guy just failed not one but two tests, and now the biggest fight that could be made in the sport is called off in May, which is a huge weekend for boxing. That's a huge,
it's the money-making month for boxing.
May and September are the two biggest months for boxing, and Canelo was supposed to take that medal from Floyd Mayweather. Now he doesn't have that option in May. And Terrence Crawford's a guy that I think people could get excited about, but he doesn't necessarily pack the punch in a marketing standpoint. So you know, this is a big, big blow for boxing today, hands down. This is a bad day.
Hopefully they can get this resolved and we can get this fight back on sometime later down in 2018. But right now, it stinks that we don't get it coming up in May.
Let's move away from boxing and let's talk NFL because the Los Angeles Rams have once again made a huge trade.
My Super Bowl champion Los Angeles Rams.
They're inching closer and closer to that being realistic. The Rams have traded a first-round pick to the New England Patriots in exchange for Brandon Cooks and a fourth-round pick. Your initial thought.
Brandon Cooks is a guy who had 1,000 yards receiving last year in New England. New England traded a first for him last year. When there was talk about the Malcolm Butler swap, but the Patriots get a first-round pick in return. He's a free agent at the end of the year. I like the deal for both sides. I think it's a great move by the Rams. They have to upgrade the offense. And for New England, now they have two first-round draft picks, which I think they're going to probably eventually move both of those and try to move up in the draft.
Now, let me rephrase that. The cost is actually a first and a fourth from the Rams. So the Patriots are getting a one and a four for Brandon Cooks. The Rams have a group of picks between rounds four and five. So the Rams will trade their first and their fourth round pick for Brandon Cooks. Cooks, for his career, 3,943 yards, 27 touchdowns, 280 catches. This guy can play football. And last year when the Patriots made the move to bring in Cooks for a first-round pick, we sat here thinking, oh my goodness, what is Cooks going to do in an offense with Tom Brady? Now I'm wondering the same thing with Cooks. You have Cooks on one side, Robert Woods in the other. You have Cooper Kupp in the middle. The Rams just replaced Sammy Watkins. It's going to cost a little bit, but it's picks this year. And what the Rams have proven going in on a one-year deal with Ndamukong Suh, trading for Talib, trading for Marcus Peters, they're going all in, and they're going all in this year.
Yeah, and the Rams have a lot of players on one-year deals, so they still have flexibility next year. For New England, though, this tells me one thing, that they might move both of those picks and try to move up and draft a future quarterback to take Tom Brady's spot, because now you have two first-round picks you can dangle. So Cooks last year, I know the last image that Patriots fans are going to have of Brandon Cooks is that Super Bowl where he got knocked out, but he played very well with them last year.
1,000-yard receiver.
No, he was their main guy last year. When Edelman went down, Brandon Cooks stepped up, and he was their most consistent wide receiver. At times, though, him and Brady did not connect on that long ball. So interesting what New England's doing moving forward.
It makes me think that a trade is coming here for New England, because it's the first time in how long that this team's had two first-round picks. Sometimes they don't have any first-round picks.
Yeah, you have to go back probably 10, 15 years to the last time they had two first-round picks. So, yeah, there's a lot of talk with Rob Gronkowski, the report out of WEEI in Boston, that they're going to move Rob Gronkowski in the next few weeks. So a lot of changing parts for the Patriots.
Which I think Gronkowski, with the Rams getting Cooks, the Rams don't have the assets, I don't think, anymore to attract Gronkowski. The team that will attract the Gronk is San Francisco.
Yeah, there was a rumor that the Giants would swap Odell Beckham Jr. for Rob Gronkowski. I don't see that happening. So, yeah, San Francisco makes the most sense
maybe
for Gronkowski.
Cleveland. Cleveland has tons of assets.
So
maybe.
I mean, the Rams upgrade, and Brandon Cooks is going to help Jared Goff in a lot of ways. That deep ball is going to be one focus there where you can just throw it up, and with that 4-2 speed, he has 4-3 speed, he'll go up and get it.
Let's take a look at the schedule in the NBA tonight. The Utah Jazz will play host to the Los Angeles Lakers at 7 p.m. Live coverage is going to begin at 6:50. David Locke and Ron Boone will bring you the play-by-play call there. Full slate of games in the NBA tonight. Toronto at Cleveland, fun matchup. Brooklyn will take on Philly. We get Atlanta at Miami. Orlando will travel to take on the Knicks. The Bulls will play host to the Hornets at 6 o'clock in that contest. We get the Wizards at the Rockets. The Bucks will welcome in the Celtics. Golden State at Oklahoma City. That game is on TNT at 6 p.m. And then we get Portland at Dallas. 7 o'clock hour outside of the Jazz and the Lakers. We get the Pacers and the Nuggets. Follow that game, Jazz fans. It is a big one. And we get Sacramento at Phoenix. Nightcap game tonight, San Antonio at the Clippers. And we'll take a quick look at the Major League Baseball scoreboard, because baseball never sleeps, especially this time of the year. We had a 15-inning game last night between the Dodgers and the Diamondbacks. Right now, bottom of the fifth, the Yankees lead the Rays 4-1, and the Mariners are also in action right now. They currently lead the Giants 4-1, and the Royals defeated the Tigers earlier today 1-0. That's a quick look at what's happening in the national sports front. Coming up on the show today, we're going to talk to Emory Spartan baseball manager Rob Smith, and we'll also be joined by Greg Peterson to talk some college hoops. It's a Tuesday edition of Drive Time Sports, and we're back after this on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Reporting from the KOAL newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. And spring break is officially over for Carbon High School. In fact, the baseball team will return to the field today as they take on the Delta Rabbits in a highly important Region 14 tilt. Now, Carbon will enter today's contest sitting 1-0 in region play. That one win came against Providence Hall back on March 23rd, and today will be the first of two consecutive games in 2 days for Carbon. Tomorrow, they'll make up a postponed game against Providence Hall. The important stretch will continue throughout the weekend as Carbon gets set to wrap up the season set with Delta on Friday. Again, today's action at home is scheduled to begin at 3 p.m., and the junior varsity will follow immediately after. We stick with Carbon High School, but we move over to softball. And today, the Lady Dinos will travel on the road to meet the South Sevier Rams in a non-region tilt. This will be the first contest for Carbon since their March 27th contest against the Union Cougars. Now, following today's game, Carbon will return to region action on Thursday as they take on the Delta Rabbits. That contest will take place at home. We move over to soccer, and today the Carbon Dinos will return to the field as they travel on the road to meet the Juab Wasps in a region tilt. So far this year, Carbon has raced out to a 2-1-1 start to region play, which puts them in fifth place in a highly competitive Region 14 division. Carbon right now trails Mesa Prep by one game in the win column, and Providence Hall, ALA, and Delta by two games in the win column. Later on in the week, Carbon will also face Union. That game will also be on the road. Next week, they'll return home to face Providence Hall, and that'll be on Tuesday. Now we stick with high school soccer, but we move over to Emory High. And the Emory Spartans are now at their spring break. And so far, the Emory Spartans have fared quite well in Region 15 play. In fact, Emory is at the top of the division at 2-1-1. That one loss coming by a final score of 1-0 to Grand. Yesterday on KOAL's Drive Time Sports, we were joined by Coach Troy Winter, and he talked about the way his team has played so far this year, entering spring break 4-3-1 overall.
I think they performed all right. We've had the tale of maybe two different teams showing up depending on the games and who our opponent is and stuff. But all in all, with everything going on, I think we're playing really well.
Now again, Emory is 2-1-1 in region play, and one of those wins came against Manti, a team that has been the top squad in Region 15 over the last couple of years. Coach Winter says so far, that's by far his team's biggest win.
It's a really big win. It gives you a lot of confidence when you knock off number one, and you're not number one until you knock off number one. And so it was a really good win for us. Good building point for a lot of players.
The Spartans will resume play next week as they return to the field, immediately picking up region action in a highly important contest against the Richfield Wildcats, which will be on the road. Between now and then, Coach Winter talked about what his team can improve on.
Finding that offensive threat, we're still kind of, we had a quality striker, last year with Juan, and trying to find that person that has that mentality and stuff has been a little bit deceiving.
You can listen to this complete interview by visiting CastleCountryRadio.com. And we move over to the national sports scene, where tonight the Utah Jazz will make their return to KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM to take on the Los Angeles Lakers. As it sits right now, the Jazz hold the number five spot in the Western Conference, but a win could move Utah up to the five spot. They trailed Oklahoma City by just a half a game. The Lakers, on the other hand, were eliminated from playoff contention last week. Live coverage of tonight's contest is scheduled to begin at 7 p.m. You can find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
There's no crying in baseball!
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss the play ball!
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
Holy cow!
We're going to talk some high school baseball on the Coach's Corner today. Well, the Carbon Dinos are going toe-to-toe with the Delta Rabbits right now. The Emory Spartans have the week off. It is spring break. They'll return to the field a week from today to take on the Manti Templars. Emory right now 2-4 in region play, but they have plenty of opportunities to get back in the thick of things of what's been a very competitive Region 15 with a lot of parity up to this point in time. Joining us right now over the phone to talk a bit about the team and the most recent loss, we have manager Rob Smith on the phone right now. Coach, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, anytime, Jordan. Thank you. Yeah,
definitely, Coach. You guys go into spring break following a setback to San Juan last week. But first things first, Coach, now that you guys have some time to kind of relax and I guess reflect on the way the season has gone to this point in time, is it a good thing or would you like to keep playing?
I think it'll be a good thing, good rest for the kids. We had a lot of games there in a little amount of time. Now it's kind of spread out more, mostly focusing just on region games, so it'll be good rest.
Well, as it sits right now, 2-4 in region play, it's kind of been a bag of mixed nuts. I mean, a big victory over Grand, and then a sweep at the hands of South Sevier, and a loss to San Juan, a split in the season set. Coach, we'll talk about this last game against San Juan. It was a game that I felt pretty good going into, especially the way you guys handled San Juan the last time you went toe-to-toe with them. Unfortunately, a 6-1 setback in this game.
Yeah, kind of frustrating. It come down to fundamental baseball, and we didn't play fundamental baseball, and it hurt us. Hopefully, we got the point across to the kids that each play is a big play, and we got to make that play.
That's kind of been the reoccurring theme. I mean, if we go back to the home loss to South Sevier, there's one error in that contest that resulted in several runs for South Sevier. So, I mean, San Juan, South Sevier, whatever game we're talking about, you can kind of point to one or two instances that really changed the complexion of the game.
Yeah, it does. Like, even against Carbon, we have four or five errors that really hurt us. It's been... Really, all of our losses have come down to fundamental baseball. We cut back on the errors. We're in every game. So,
looking at some of the games that you guys have won, Coach, a 10-run performance against San Juan and a win, a 9-run performance in a game against South Summit. Have you been able to gauge where this team needs to be offensive-wise as far as run support to your pitching staff in order to put themselves in position to get a win?
I think if we score anywhere from 4 to 5 runs, we should be okay if our defense plays the defense that we know how. When we play good defense, we hold teams to low amounts of runs. When we do make an error, it seems to explode and we don't stop the bleeding, and they score 5 or 6 in inning. And that's what it's come down to in the win-loss column for us.
Has there been any particular aspect that you can attribute that to? I mean, has it been the outfield? I mean, where have the biggest problems been defensively for this team?
A little bit of everywhere. Sadly, but true, it's been a little bit of everywhere. I think it just comes down to being mentally prepared for the ball to come to you. And that's one thing we're going to really focus on the second half of the season, and hopefully things will look up for us.
You know, you mentioned the contest against Carbon, and so never fun to lose to your rival, regardless if it's a region game or not. But to play Carbon on Wednesday and then come back and play San Juan on Friday, was there some ill effects in the carryover there, Coach? I mean, that 16-0 loss, did some of that carry over in that game against San Juan?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think we mentally prepared. They were still a little down from Wednesday and didn't mentally prepare fully for San Juan on Friday.
Again, we're being joined right now by Coach Rob Smith of the Emory High School baseball team. Coach, what did you tell the kids as you guys break for spring break, and what's kind of the routine during this lengthy layoff?
I told them to enjoy a couple days, let their bodies recover. We're going to start again today, go hard for a couple days, and then we'll give them the weekend and Friday off, and then come prepared mentally for region games Tuesday.
Seems like a long ways off, but it's really not. I mean, next Tuesday, you guys will take the field, so you have a week off between now and then. What are some of the things that you work on in practice, and what's the routine there? Is it kind of the same as it has been all year, or do you change things up knowing that there's no game this week?
This week we're going to focus a little bit more on bullpens, and then just hitting and fielding. So pretty much the same stuff, a little more bullpens. During the week, we don't have time to throw bullpens, really work on stuff, just because we have so many games and got to keep arms fresh. So this week, we'll focus a little more on bullpens.
Let's talk about that rotation, Coach. Who have you been impressed with, and what's been the biggest strong point for this team as far as the pitching rotation goes?
Rotationally-wise, our kids have been throwing really well. Easton Gordon's been throwing well. Cade Brazier's throwing well. Kyson Stilson's throwing really well. Really, we've been in the games pitching-wise. Walks do hurt us a little bit. But really, it comes down to playing defense behind those pitchers. They're getting the balls where they need to be. Defensively, we just need to make the plays behind them.
I do want to talk about a couple of kids that have been phenomenal for you offensively. Easton Gordon, who's a senior, is batting over .500 this year. You got Colton Wilson, who it seems every time I take a look at a box score, Colton has done something good at the plate. This kid's batting over .300. And then you have Jesse Barnett, who's a junior. He's also batting over .300. But between those three guys, I mean, that's a lot of offensive firepower that you've had so far this year, Coach.
Yeah, they've been swinging really well, seeing the ball. Our leadoff guys, Kyson Stilson, Rance Jensen, they're doing a great job of getting on base, giving those other three an opportunity to drive runs in. One thing we're really focusing on is one run an inning, and if we can get on and get those guys up to bat with somebody on, we usually do get that one run, and that's our goal. So,
as far as taking advantage of runners on base, I think you guys have left something. You've left over 100 runners on base. Is that right? Is that accurate up to this point?
That is. In big game, big situations, we tend to leave bases loaded quite often. Our bottom half of our lineup struggled with getting runners around, moving runners around. That's one thing we've been focusing on is putting the ball in play, cutting down on strikeouts, give ourselves a chance.
That's probably the most frustrating aspect as a coach, right? Because you can't be in the batter's box with these guys, but when you have bases loaded or you have runners in scoring position and a golden opportunity in games that have been close, and just about every game has been close this year, to not bring those guys across the plate, how do you handle that as a manager?
That's a tough situation. Keep working. We just got to get those bottom half kids to buy into the process and say, hey, if we do put the ball in play, there's a chance they make an error. Then we take advantage of that error. Kind of like teams have been doing to us. We make an error, they take advantage of it. And I think that's what our bottom half needs to realize.
Coach, you mentioned it. Now that we're into the second half of the season, I can't believe the season's already halfway over. But are you happy with the progression this team continues to make?
Yeah. Yeah, I like to. We beat Grand. We beat Union. We played good baseball against those guys. We had a couple kids say, hey, we're a good baseball team. And we are. We're a good baseball team. We have a lot of room to improve. If we do that, you know, things are going to look up for us come state time.
Let's talk about the next region tilt. It'll be against a Manti team. You guys will see Manti twice next week, once on Tuesday and again on Friday. It's a team that has not won a region game up to this point in time, Coach, so an opportunity for you not only to develop kind of an instrumental lead over Manti, but at the same time position yourself right back in the top half of the region standings. I mean, it's a big, big week coming up.
It is, and that's one thing we've been stressing to the kids. Hey, go out and play the baseball game the way you know how. And we'll be right in this thing come state tournament time. We play good baseball. It's anybody's game.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt about it. Coach, I definitely appreciate you taking out the time to join us today. Enjoy spring break, and I know we'll talk again here relatively soon.
All right, thank you, Jordan.
Again, that's manager Rob Smith of the Emory High School baseball team talking about his crew. And again, they'll take the remainder of the week off before returning to the field on Tuesday of next week to take on the Manti Templars. We've got a break for just a moment. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up. When we return, we're going to talk to Greg Peterson, one of the best basketball minds I know as far as the college ranks go. He's the co-host of the March to Madness on Sirius XM Radio. We're going to talk to Greg about last night's finale when we return right here on Drive Time Sports.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750, the play-by-play home of the USU Eastern Eagles.
The college basketball season is now complete. We're going to recap last night's national championship contest and the previous NCAA tournament, which went by in a flash. Joining us right now to talk a bit about that, we have Greg Peterson, who was kind enough to join us throughout the tournament. Of course, you can hear Greg on Sirius XM Radio, co-host of the March to Madness, and now the March Madness is all wrapped up. Greg, a pleasure to get you on the show today. Thank you.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Jordan. Feels like just a couple weeks ago we were talking about like Utah and the non-conference slate, and now it's all over.
Yeah, I can't believe it, how fast the season actually went by. But let's start by talking about last night's contest. Greg, I don't want to sound like that guy that says, I knew this was coming, because, look, all of us have our faults as far as our bracket go. But when you take a look at the national championship matchup last night, I could not find a redeeming quality for Michigan that led me to believe that they could actually hang with Villanova and come out on top last night. To me, it was very predictable. I thought that Villanova would control the majority of the second half, and with about, I don't know, 10, 9, 8 minutes left, they would push this to a double-digit lead that would just be instrumental, and that's exactly what happened. I mean, just too much firepower from this Villanova squad.
There was one chance for Michigan. Mo Wagner got off to a really nice start. And I thought that if there was one player that could cause Villanova some issues, it would be Mo Wagner. I mean, he hits that deep three. They go down low to him a couple times. He gets a bunch of easy points. Michigan goes up by 7 points. That's the only point in the game where I thought, hey, Michigan has a chance. But Villanova quickly neutralized that. Dante DiVincenzo took over the game. And once Villanova went on that big 25-7 run in the first half, you knew this game was over.
You mentioned Dante DiVincenzo, who was, again, phenomenal. 31 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists in this game. A record for a bench player in the national championship contest. That's just proof of the type of firepower that Villanova has. He's not the only guy capable of doing this on the team either.
No, not at all. I mean, Jalen Brunson is the national player of the year, for goodness sake. He's a guy that averages over 19 points, 4 assists, shoots over 40% from distance. Mikal Bridges had a very nice season himself. You've got players up and down this roster. Omari Spellman, Phil Booth was the hero in the national championship 2 years ago when he came off the bench for 20-plus. So, I mean, Villanova just top to bottom, a loaded team. And when they're hitting their threes, and Dante DiVincenzo was doing all of that for Villanova last night, this team is just almost insurmountable.
As far as Villanova's route to the national championship goes, and I think this is a relevant conversation just because we were talking so much about, like, Kentucky. You know, had Kentucky, had they gotten past Kansas State, their route to the Final Four would have been a cakewalk. In comparison to, we'll say, Michigan, when you take a look at the competition that Villanova had to play over the past 2.5, 3 weeks, what did you take? What was your take on their competition and the route they had to go to get there?
I thought they had to play a bunch of unique teams. I mean, Kansas is a team that plays much like them in which they bomb threes. They had to play, I thought, the biggest matchup nightmare in the NCAA tournament in West Virginia because you only have a couple days to prepare for a team that goes at you full court press for 40 minutes. So, I mean, I thought that the fact that they were able to get by in that game and win by double digits was unique. They played a team that put the clamps down on you on defense in Texas Tech. So this team had a little bit of everything thrown at them. Heck, even in their first round game against Radford, Radford is a team that's in the bottom 10 in the nation in regards to pace of play. So they had to play much slower in that game than normal, and they were just able to beat them at that game, too. So I felt like Villanova had a much tougher road, and Michigan was the first team to ever make the national championship without ever having to play a top 5 seed. I thought that was interesting.
They beat Radford by 26. They beat Alabama by 23. They beat West Virginia by 12. They beat Texas Tech by 12. I mean, every game in this tournament, they won by double digits. It's a landslide over Kansas, and then they dominate Michigan yesterday. The toughest challenge had to have been West Virginia, right?
I think so. I mean, I actually thought West Virginia was going to win that game in my bracket, but once they got past West Virginia, I'm just like, I don't think that there are any challengers that are going to be able to put up a fight against Villanova. I thought West Virginia was that one team just because they are so unique in their defense. They do have so many guys that come at you. They play like turkeys with their heads cut off. I mean, it's absolutely insane. Once they got through that game, I thought it was Villanova's tournament to lose, and it turned out to be that.
Let's talk about Jay Wright and what this means for Jay Wright. I mean, obviously, this is a team that plays a brand of basketball that has a lot of success in the NBA. I mean, again, it's that type of offense. You don't have to have a legitimate big. You can stretch the four with a stretch four. That's exactly what Jay Wright does. This is the brand of basketball that has kind of caught fire in the NBA as of late. I remember talking to Bobby Bowden about, boy, it's been 4 or 5 years ago here on the show. One of the things that he said always stuck with me. It was when Florida State won their first national championship. And I said, what's the big problem? What's next for Jimbo Fisher? What's a hurdle that he's going to have to climb? And he said, well, everyone's going to offer him a job. Jay Wright is now that guy. I don't know if he was before last night, but he definitely is now. People are going to come calling for Jay Wright. What are the odds that this guy stays at Villanova long term?
I think that there are actually pretty good odds. I mean, this is a guy that actually went to college at Bucknell, which is located in the state of Pennsylvania, so he has great fondness for the area. And let's face it, we've seen a lot of guys make the leap from college to the NBA, and they haven't had success. I mean, John Calipari couldn't do it, and we've seen how John Calipari has done in college. And he led UMass and Memphis to the Final Four, for goodness sakes. I mean, granted, some of those were vacated, but we will just ignore that fact. But, I mean, there are so many guys that have went to the NBA. They haven't been successful. I do feel like the recent success of some coaches in the NBA going from college, I mean, mainly from Florida, I'm forgetting Billy Donovan,
yeah,
who went from Florida to the NBA with the Thunder. He's had some success, but past that, I mean, there just aren't a lot of guys that have done it. And I mean, he had the good fortune of being in Oklahoma City, a team that has been making the playoffs year after year after year. I mean, if Jay Wright were to go to the NBA, who would he be taking over in? Memphis? Phoenix? I mean, those are just not very appealing places. So I think he'll be sticking around at Villanova for a while.
Yeah, I think Brad Stevens is another guy that you could talk about that had success in college into the NBA, but even that feels different because I don't know that Brad Stevens was ever truly a college coach, if that makes sense. Jay Wright's a college coach.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And I mean, the fact that he went to the Celtics too, that helps out Brad Stevens a little bit more as well. It's all about the fit because, I mean, throw out there a good but not great team. The Portland Trail Blazers, that's a perfect example. I mean, if Jay Wright were offered a job by the Portland Trail Blazers, I think he would take that. I mean, I think he would take that much more so than, say, the Memphis Grizzlies, who's right now just tanking like crazy, hoping to get a top draft pick. I mean, it's all about the fit.
Again, we're being joined right now by Greg Peterson as we break down the college basketball tournament season, which came to a close. Greg, I got to get your thoughts on this. I know you're a men's fanatic as far as college basketball goes, one of the best college basketball minds I know. With that being said, I said on the show yesterday, the women's Final Four was much more entertaining than the men's.
Oh, yeah. I mean, without a doubt. Now, you had a good slate for the Final Four for the men's because you had a Cinderella. You had 2-1 seeds. You had a blue blood in Michigan. I mean, you can only pick four teams, so there's only so many storylines that you can get. But the games themselves were so much better. I mean, you had Goomba Wally for Notre Dame hitting the game winner in the national championship and the Final Four game against UConn. You cannot beat that. And you had an actual upset, too. So, I mean, I will have to agree with you. The Final Four on the women's side, much, much more entertaining.
From an individual standpoint on the men's side, which player helped their draft stock out the most during the NCAA tournament? Does one come to mind?
Mo Wagner, without a doubt. I mean, he was a guy that many people thought was going to be more of a mid to late second round pick. Actually, probably not a late second rounder, but more in the mid second round range. Now I think that there's no doubt that he's a first rounder, and I think that he is gone. I mean, if Dante DiVincenzo really wants to leave too, he's not going to have a game better than that. On the biggest stage in college basketball, he came off the bench, he had 31 points, and he completely took over that tournament game. So, I mean, he certainly helped it out. Jalen Brunson as well. I mean, we were talking about this before the tournament of guys that could really help themselves out. Villanova winning the title really looks good on Jalen Brunson, and the fact that he got the Player of the Year honor certainly is not going to hurt either. So, I think that those players helped themselves. And if he wants to go to the NBA too, take a look at a guy who only played one game, but Mike Dom of South Dakota State. He was very impressive in that game against Ohio State. He's a 6'10", 240-pound big man that's able to shoot threes at an over 40-point clip. Guy does a little bit of everything. I think that if you're an NBA team, you're looking for a second-round flyer, a guy that can make your roster and still can play in the NBA as it is today. Mike Dom is a very good player.
I think that I personally think Brunson is the only player that's going to go in the first round, but you bring up Mo Wagner, and here's a kid that's, what, 6'11", 6'10", can hit the outside shot. I think you've seen steady improvement over his last 3 years at Michigan, and that accounts for something, obviously, but it seems like scouts really try to stray away from kids who are going into their senior year or junior year. They love these one-and-dones. They love these kids that leave after their sophomore year. To me, that works against Wagner. I think he's a borderline first-rounder, definitely helped his draft stock. Maybe it's one of those astronomical climbs, a kid that maybe wasn't going to get drafted at all, climbs into the early portion of the second round, but that's kind of the way I view Wagner.
Yeah, I think that he's a late first-rounder personally just because he does have the size. He was a little bit more of a developmental player, and he's obviously come on strong. And just his size and being able to shoot threes, that combination, it's going to bode well in the NBA. He's not going to be like a starter right off the bat or anything like that, but I do think that he does find a way to go into the late first round, even though we know that this draft is very loaded with guys like Ayton Bagley. The list goes on and on.
Yeah, Ayton Bagley, Porter, you know, we talk about Jaren Jackson, Trey Young, Colin Sexton, Wendell Carter. I mean, we're talking about young kids that are going to be riddled throughout the top 10.
Yeah, I mean, this draft is completely insane. So many people are asking, why are so many of these NBA teams tanking? Well, there's your answer right there. If you get any of those, like, top 8 picks, you're looking at possibly getting a guy that can completely transcend your franchise. I think that this draft is very similar to the one in 2003. Now, I don't think anyone becomes LeBron James or anything like that, but, I mean, you've just got quality throughout that entire lottery portion of the draft.
Definitely a lot of moments like that, I think, throughout this tournament. As far as the entertainment value goes front to back, it was by far leaps and bounds better than what we saw last year. I don't think there's any comparison.
I think that last year's tournament was less upsets, but I do think we had a bunch of good entertaining games because what we saw last year were a bunch of games in like that round of 32, Sweet 16, that you knew that a team was going to make a run at some point because it felt like every game last year, a team would get down by, say, 15 points, And then, boom, they pull off a 14-2 run, and you've got a three-point game all of a sudden. That's what last year's NCAA tournament provided. This year's tournament provided more outright upsets, but those upsets were big, giant blowouts. I mean, Texas A&M mopping the floor with UNC. UMBC winning by 20 against Virginia. I mean, the list goes on and on. So I thought that we had more blowouts, but we had more upsets this year as well.
So let me ask you this. Did the best team in the country win the national championship this year?
I do think so. When it's all said and done, Villanova was in the top five the entire year. They did have a head-scratching loss to St. John's in Big East play. They did lose at Creighton once as well. But, I mean, past that, Villanova has really been one of the best teams in the country throughout the entire year. I mean, this is a team that was built on junior and senior leadership, though. You did obviously have some younger players at DiVincenzo. Amari Spellman is a freshman, but I do think that the best team won the national championship this year.
Greg, before I let you go, please let the listeners know where they can find more of your work.
You can find me on Twitter at GUnit_81. I am the host of the March to Madness, which, now that the madness is done, it's going to be scaled back quite a bit, so that's unfortunate. But always on SiriusXM Channel 204. I do a little bit more than college basketball as well, so you'll be seeing me do a little baseball, do a little NHL, things like that. So it's going to be a lot of fun. At GUnit_81 is the Twitter handle for all that.
Greg, I always appreciate the time. Thank you again for joining us on the show today, and I know we'll talk again soon.
Jordan, always a pleasure. Thank you.
We've got a break for just a moment, but we do have more Drive Time Sports coming up. When we return, we're going to flip back over to the NFL here on this Tuesday edition of the show.
Hey, this is Stephen Curry from the Golden State Warriors, number 30. You listen to Drive Time Sports on KOAL 750 AM.
We're back to put the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports. Didn't have a whole lot of time to talk about the ramifications of this Patriots-Rams deal that went down earlier, about an hour ago. The Rams making a trade, bringing in Brandon Cooks. Here's the official result. The Rams get Brandon Cooks and New England's fourth-round pick. The Patriots, in return, will get a first-round pick, which is 23 overall, and the Rams' sixth-rounder. That's the final logistics of this trade.
Brandon Cooks in the final year of his deal. Now the Patriots have two first-round picks on the back end at 23 and, 30, I believe, or New England's two first-round picks. So I don't think New England's done with those two picks. I think they try to move both and move up maybe even more into the draft.
Now, according to Adam Schefter, he said the Rams were in discussion with the Giants for an Odell Beckham trade, which means that was serious. For a long time, I thought, nah, no way. This is an agent-driven league. We had this conversation last week. Remember, I told you it's agent-driven. This is a scare tactic to entice the Giants to make Odell Beckham the highest-paid receiver in football. Apparently, there was some truth to that. And the Rams didn't like the deal, so they moved on. They've been discussing this trade for over a month with the Patriots. And so the Rams get their replacement for Sammy Watkins. Okay, we can talk about the Rams later. The Patriots, what does this mean for New England? You mentioned that the Patriots would be in the market to move on from Rob Gronkowski. According to Adam Schefter, this trade means Rob Gronkowski will in fact be a New England Patriot next year. Many have thought that this was the end for Gronkowski. We mentioned a couple of potential landing spots for him. New England will now rely on Julian Edelman, Chris Hogan, Rob Gronkowski. I'd have to believe Kenny Britt will factor into there, Malcolm Mitchell. They still have options. But do you like this trade for the Patriots? And do you like how this kind of halts what they're doing offensively and they're going to roll with what they have now as far as their unit currently?
I like that they get another first-round pick. It just depends on what they do with those two first-round picks and what direction they go. Because they're going to eventually have to draft a quarterback to replace Tom Brady.
Yep.
So maybe this move entices them to move up more in the draft, maybe inside the top 10 and draft one of those quarterbacks. I don't know. I don't know what route the Patriots are going to go, but as long as you have Tom Brady there, he's going to make everybody around him better. So I think offensively they're fine. Defensively is where they're hurting.
Yeah, look, this is a team that they've had success with guys unknown, undrafted. Look, Julian Edelman was a quarterback at Kent State when he was in college.
And then he's a 1,000-yard receiver.
Now he's a 1,000-yard receiver, right. You can go down. Troy Brown was playing both sides of the football, was a very effective weapon for the Patriots.
Chris Hogan played lacrosse.
Chris Hogan was let go right? He was let go by Buffalo, right?
Yeah, he goes to New England. He's catching 4 or 5 touchdowns a year, around 500 to 700 yards a year.
Patriots give up a first to get Brandon Cooks. They got excellent production out of him. He was a 1,000-yard receiver, and now they are giving Brandon Cooks to the Rams. They get a first-round pick back, a higher pick than what they gave up. So I don't fault either side here. I think it's actually a pretty good trade for both teams.
Yeah, it works out both ways. New England wasn't going to re-sign him long-term and pay him the money that he wants, so they move on to a first-round pick. The Rams get a receiver to replace Sammy Watkins, and that means the Rams are all in. And that's what the Rams have to do. If you're a team that is so close and you're on the cusp like the Rams are, go all in.
I just made a bet with my boss here at the station, Ann. If you know Ann, Ann does not eat Big Macs for some reason.
Or Pop-Tarts.
Or Pop... Isn't that odd?
Yeah. Pop-Tarts and Big Macs.
She refuses. She refuses.
I guess I get the Big Mac part.
No, come on. Big Macs are delicious.
But Pop-Tarts? Pop-Tarts are awesome. The brown sugar Pop-Tarts are clutch.
Not only does she not, like, she refuses. She will not eat them. We will go out and grab Big Macs. She will not eat them. Okay, so we have a bet. I am so confident that the Rams are going to win Super Bowl 53. I'm all in. I'm pushing my chips all the way into the center here. I gave her the field. If the Rams don't win at all, I have to eat a plate of liver and onions, which, look, you know me. I'm a very adventurous eater. You know this.
You, every time we go out, you will eat anything that's on your plate.
The weirdest thing. I like to eat the weirdest thing. I've never tried liver and onions. And again, I will eat almost anything that's edible. She will not eat Big Macs, so she gets the field. If the Rams don't win the Super Bowl, I'll eat liver and onions. When they win Super Bowl 53, she'll have to eat a Big Mac and a Pop-Tart. That's only like 11 months, right? We have 10 and a half months to prepare for this. I like their odds. I think this trade today means the Rams are the front runner in the NFC. I really do.
I said it before they made all the moves, and that was, what, 2 months ago? I said the Rams would win the Super Bowl, so yeah, the Rams are going to win the Super Bowl. So get those Big Macs and Pop-Tarts ready.
Out of time on this edition of Drive Time Sports. I want to thank Coach Rob Smith and, of course, Greg Peterson for taking out the time to join us. We'll be back to do it again tomorrow. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. Be safe. We are out.